Io ne ho viste cose che voi umani non potreste immaginarvi. Navi da combattimento in fiamme al largo dei bastioni di Orione.
Descrizioni e analisi di eventi e lotte,
fatti e strategie del mondo e sue distopie.
Sintonizzate e sintonizzate sui 105-250 della modulazione di frequenza di Radio Blackout. Alla fine di maggio c'è stata qui a Torino una retrospettiva integrale dell'opera di un grande regista etiope, Haile Gerima, una retrospettiva che è stata un'occasione unica per conoscere il lavoro di questo regista, che è una figura di spicco della cinematografia dell'Africa, ma anche della cinematografia afroamericana, perché poi lui si è trasferito nel 1967 negli Stati Uniti, avendo vinto una borsa di studio, e qui poi ha dato vita, intorno agli anni 70, alla scuola dei registi neri di Los Angeles, che sperimentava delle nuove narrative che rompevano le logiche produttive di Hollywood. Lui, attraverso il suo cinema, ha portato avanti una ricostruzione della colonialismo italiano, della storia del suo paese, soprattutto manifestando un'opposizione contro ogni forma di oppressione, che sia coloniale, che razziale, sociale e culturale. Ha esplorato il presente, ma il rapporto con le radici, ha ricostruito la storia del suo paese come un antidoto contro l'alienazione e soprattutto ha fatto del suo cinema uno strumento per decolonizzare le menti. Quindi un'occasione unica è stata quella di non solo vedere la retrospettiva dei suoi film, è la prima volta che c'è una retrospettiva integrale dei film di Haile Gerima, ma anche una grande occasione è stata quella di poterlo incontrare, e infatti lo abbiamo intervistato, un'intervista molto interessante in cui Haile Gerima affronta i temi più significativi della sua produzione cinematografica, ma anche il suo punto di vista riguardo alla guerra, al razzismo, alla decolonizzazione e al passato coloniale dell'Etiopia. Vi proponiamo quindi questa intervista.
E questa la registrazione comunque è ovviamente in inglese, e magari è il caso di introdurla brevemente, giusto per dare una traccia di quello che Gerima ci ha raccontato. Ed è tutta giocata sul filo del colonialismo esperito da lui, dal suo popolo, dall'Etiopia, dal Tigray, che in questo periodo è particolarmente sotto i riflettori. Lui parte dal fatto che c'è stato comunque nel Corno d'Africa una specie di interconnessione, un'intersezione tra il colonialismo britannico e quello italiano, e che ciascuno di loro ha dovuto fare i conti. Parte proprio dall'educazione, perché è molto attento sia nel suo cinema sia anche nell'esposizione delle sue idee al parallelismo tra l'educazione di stampo anglosassone e quella italiana, in primis come base, come radice da cui partire, perché è fondamentale, è centrale secondo lui il colonialismo linguistico. E il colonialismo linguistico per lui, per la sua generazione, è totalmente anglofono, mentre già sua madre invece parlava l'italiano. Poi sentirete che prende in considerazione anche la storia etiope per intrecciarla alla propria vita vissuta, perché ha vissuto buona parte, è cresciuto in Etiopia, poi si è trasferito negli Stati Uniti. Lì ha assorbito in Africa la cultura inglese. Infatti dice, sentirete a un certo punto, che dopo aver parlato di quelle che sono state le battaglie contro gli italiani, Ambaradan in particolare, Adwa, Macalè, che sono punti di riferimento proprio perché sono vissute dagli africani come luoghi, come contesto, come zone dove è avvenuta una storia, dove si è sviluppata la storia. Ecco, lui dice che era pronto quando è partito, perché era colonizzato, era pronto ad assorbire un'altra cultura, quella americana, appunto, sulla base di quella anglofona che aveva. Ha avuto anche un passaggio in Germania Est, infatti ci sono alcuni film che lui ha girato in Germania Est o comunque ambientandoli lì, proprio perché in Germania ha avuto un'altra esperienza, un altro tipo di esperienza, dove c'era più libertà, si trattava degli anni 70, quindi un momento proprio di grande sforzo libertario 60-70 e lui l'ha vissuto in primis, in prima persona in Germania. Il suo primo film infatti è Kill Tarzan, perché uccidere Tarzan? Perché Tarzan uccideva gli africani, quindi era praticamente il simbolo del nemico. E poi c'è una frase che cerco di tradurvi, dice: quando sono arrivato in America ero una persona colonizzata, pronta a sparire nell'americanismo. E infatti aderisce al black nationalism, a esperienze con Malcolm X, con Angela Davis, anzi dice che il motivo per cui ha iniziato a lavorare nel cinema è casuale, perché lui in realtà faceva altro, oltre a fare il giardiniere a Chicago e subire il razzismo americano, che è ancora diverso rispetto a quello inglese o a quello italiano, che sono comunque tutti e tre dei razzismi, ma sono con sfumature diverse. Lì in America aveva incontrato anche Frantz Fanon e aveva capito il ruolo di genere nella negritudine di Frantz Fanon. Poi ha incontrato Amelie Baraka, cioè Roy Jones, scrisse un testo fondamentale come Il popolo del blues, e fu lui a convincerlo a fare cinema. Poi ci ha raccontato in questa breve intervista, non tanto breve intervista, che ha fatto una serie di confronti tra gli italiani e gli inglesi, e dice che gli italiani mi considerano un portatore di cattive storie, perché gli italiani hanno voluto dimenticare cosa sono stati, si sono fatti tutto un loro film sul colonialismo che è per autoassolversi, e la presenza comunque di una persona nera, magari intellettuale come lui, li pone a confronto con loro stessi, con quello che hanno fatto. Invece gli inglesi, dice, proprio puoi scavare finché vuoi, ma non trovi mai la loro essenza. Si lamenta per gli italiani della burocrazia becera, mentre gli inglesi non affrontano le situazioni che loro stessi hanno creato, e faceva gli esempi delle guerre, l'Iraq, l'Afghanistan, il Pakistan, l'impero indiano e simili. Invece gli italiani hanno voluto creare divisioni etniche. Un esempio può essere l'ultimo legaiolo morto, per il quale non abbiamo nessun cordoglio, cioè Maroni, che è stato uno dei fautori di questa visione etnica. Poi è molto interessante perché già veniva fuori dal film che ha fatto con Kapuscinski, e quando l'ha presentato in sala nella proiezione si è proprio scagliato insultando pesantemente il mitico giornalista che aveva trascorso il suo tempo in Africa raccontandola e diventando mitico proprio per il suo modo di raccontarla, dicendo che gli europei non possono parlare di Africa perché non hanno il linguaggio, e lì si ritorna al linguaggio. Gli esseri umani non sono dei megafoni, quando sviluppi il linguaggio bisogna considerare il contesto, e gli europei europei, gli occidentali, non possono avere questa possibilità di approcciare l'Africa nella sua essenza. E questa è la parte forse più interessante dell'intervista. Infatti, a questo punto parla anche della battaglia di Adwa, dicendo che fu una guerra psicologica e non solo fisica, perché gli africani conoscevano bene il contesto, conoscevano il territorio, ma anche la lingua con cui, attraverso la quale approcciarsi al territorio, che erano piena di riferimenti tramandati, di cultura, che gli italiani non potevano conoscere, quindi hanno perso per quello. Questo è un po' un tentativo di riassumere quello che sentirete in un inglese molto, molto, un po' difficile. Anche per il contesto in cui abbiamo registrato la cosa, in un hall di un hotel molto molto rumorosa, vabbè, però si riesce a intendere, cercate di cogliere perché è davvero molto interessante come punto di vista sul colonialismo italo-americano, inglese, europeo, occidentale, ma anche quello che può esserci tra le etnie del Corno d'Africa.
I mean, I would like to start from the fact that your cinema evokes many journeys across time and space, connecting a lot of questions that are very relevant and important for us here and for us as humanity. So I would like to start from your choice to move from Gondar to United States, Chicago, and then to Los Angeles, if I'm right. And how did you involve yourself in the LA rebellion movement, and all kind of impact it had on your cinema?
Well, good. But my journey is first from Gondar to Jimma.
Okay.
My sister was a nurse in Jimma, and then from Jimma to Addis Ababa, Addis Ababa to Chicago,
okay.
Chicago to Los Angeles. It's leapfrogging. But in the generation I belong, that I was speaking a lot about, that Teza is all about, it's about really the intersection of the Italian colonialism with the British colonialism. Many people do not know Ethiopia, after it fought the Italians, was deeply in trouble with British colonial ambition, protectorate, etc. And the Ethiopians very shrewdly fought the British, but they had to Haile Selassie had to run from the British jurisdiction in Addis Ababa to Malta, where he goes to Roosevelt on the boat and pleads with Roosevelt that the English are trying to recolonize me. And so Roosevelt tells Churchill, stop it. And then even this for Ethiopia is a new form of imperial belonging, in the sense that in the Second World War, whether people like it or not, including Italians, everybody is under the American Empire. The American Empire is English Empire. So when you are educated by English, you're still in the empire of the Anglo-Saxon English power.
Yeah.
So the Second World War, when the United States became heroic, the role it played against fascism, Nazism, etc., it became a world power. Up to now, it does what it wants to do. And in Ethiopia, for my first teachers, for example, as I said in the discussion, my mother was Italian colony. She spoke Italian, for example, with Amharic also, which is her tongue, mother tongue. But my generation immediately, belonged, even though now I learned more and more from my father, from history, Ethiopians defeated the Italians. Ethiopians accepted the British narrative. The British narrative was, we freed you.
Yeah.
And now we're going to tell you how to go. And many Ethiopians learned this, my generation. We went to school in Addis, Jimma, Gondar, it doesn't matter. English is first the tongue. And to me, language begins the beginning colonialism. Because language, for example, immediately Haile Selassie comes to power, the Bandas, those who collaborated with the Italians, found a job because they went to fourth grade by Italian education. So the patriots, the peasant, the others, nationalists, they didn't go to school except traditional school. So the Haile Selassie's idea of modernization was using the Banda, those collaborators, to be the bureaucrats in municipal works, etc., etc. And they became a decisive bureaucracy for Haile Selassie, who was also uncertain about the patriots.
Okay.
Because the patriots are talking about, you left the country, and no king before ever left Ethiopia. You were the first king. This stigma became a psychological problem, I think, to Haile Selassie. Although kings can't have psychological problem. They don't see psychiatrists, but I believe he had a very sensitive area on this ground. So he made sure the narrative of history industry changed into Haile Selassie. Even Menelik was undermined, really. Mm-hmm. Tedros, other kings were forgotten, and it became his you know, his history. And then also he glorified Maicho, the Battle of Maicho, where he participated.
Okay.
The only place he participated in 1935 is Maicho. But Maicho is a 3 hours war. Tamben is 10 months. 10,000 Italians were killed. Ambar Adom, the field marshal of Ethiopia, Ras Mulugeta, who died there, he was killed by collaborators and Italians. And then you have the 10 month is the Tamben War. So you have Takaze Shire. That's also a very serious war. But you know, see, Dubono comes only to capture Adwa. Badoglio comes to capture Ethiopia.
Yeah.
That's where the Italian army begins to drop poison gas. And so what you have here is that Haile Selassie became the war hero with the British. Okay, he went to the League, but he was in effect in the League. But the British also tried to use him, either overthrow him or use him to come back with him. They come back with him, but he tricked them by going to the American orbit, and he lasted. And so education meant at that time those who speak English.
Okay.
So it's a status. The elite in Ethiopia, English modified. To know English is to be the new power structure, the British, who helped us, not even who defeated the Italians. It's not true. Seriously, this is not me being political, but the barefoot Ethiopians, when they went into a guerrilla mode, Italia was finished. And Italy defeated Ethiopians in all the offensive war. And Haile Selassie was told, let's go guerrilla, all of us. Let Ethiopia be a country of guerrilla warfare. Do not do Adwa again. It's not the same game. And there were Ethiopians who saw the modernization of the military junta in Italy, Mussolini's industry of war weapon is in, you know, something you can't compare it. So anyway,
but what I was interested, that something that you mentioned, that in the US, in some way your point of view on the token is
starting... I'm coming to that. Coming to that, because I just wanted to tell you that English is how you become anybody. Like education, fourth grade in Asmara, in Italy, in Ethiopia, fourth grade is your somebody. You're not nobody. You are Italian patented fourth grade. In my time, the British eclipsed into becoming the American English. American Peace Corps start coming in my time. American Peace Corps teachers that were like 21, 22. For example, in history class, Americans will teach us the American Revolution and many other stupid things, including but the French Revolution also, etc. But not Ethiopian history, because they're young people, they're college kids of like 21, 18. Then you have, before that, the British educated Indian, Sudanese, Egyptian teachers. What, even the Indians, for example, I made a speech in India about, I was studying Chandragupta 1, 2, Chandragupta 10. These are the kings of India. Has nothing to do with my life, but the Indian was a teacher. He spoke English. In Ethiopia, he teaches what he wants. Americans taught us what they want. So my aspiration at that time was, again, all crisscrossing. Also cinema, Hollywood especially, began to alter our sensibility, our cultural tradition. For example, in my time, clearly in my time, from 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, I could show you pictures. Suddenly, we're going towards this hyphenated modernization that's neither American nor Ethiopian. For example, we desired Western music. We desired, we admired Western movies, cowboys. We didn't identify with Indians. In fact, my first film at the film school, after I did my first one, was it's called Kill Tarzan. was to kill Tarzan in my head, because when we were kids, Tarzan is killing Africans and we are with him as he kills Africans. Yeah. So this is the completely, in my own time, a whole cultural colonization, language, desire, girlfriends we desired were all white. We used to have a picture of Kodak cut out with this woman for Kodak camera.
Yeah.
My friends I have, he's in Germany now, we're holding this white woman taking our picture. Our girls became invisible, Ethiopian women. And so when I hit America, I am a very colonized person.
Okay.
Very colonized, ready to disappear into this notion of Americanism, modernism. It gets very confused. It's not rational. It's when you study Fanon, Franz Fanon, you find more the problem. So I was then hit by black nationalism in America. The African American community thinks of Ethiopia, defeated Italy, Adwa, but here this Ethiopian is completely lost. I don't know history. I don't know nothing. So the black Americans start to challenge me. Do you know where you come from? Do you know who you are? All this thing. But at the same time, the black power movement. At the same time, because I'm not a scholarship student, I think I work to do gardening, etc., to make money to pay school. I find racism immediately, especially in, I would say, in my 2 years in Chicago, 3 years maybe, in the suburban, in the suburbs of Illinois, I used to be a foreign student who did gardening, etc., for housewives, you know, American housewives. Very, very ignorant population. And it's like the ones who go to Oprah show. They're very white.
In Chicago?
Huh?
This in Chicago? Or
outskirts of Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. Illinois, I said. On the outskirts, because I work, I'm a foreign student going to the, you take 3 hours train to go do gardening to get paid cash, foreign students. So I would travel that far and I was met by racism constantly. And I was saying, no, but I'm not a Negro. When I came to America, African Americans were called Negro Americans. And Negro Americans, it implies they didn't come from Africa. It was something created, in my mind, created in America. So now you start to see, you start to have relationship, friends, and then especially reading the writings of militant African Americans, I start to see myself. And gradually, you know, Franz Fanon, you know, actually the first Wretched of the Earth in Chicago, two books was given to me because of my confusion. One black American woman, she gave me Facing Mount Kenya by Jomo Kenyatta. She must have known I'm messed up in the head. Then a white friend, nice guy, very quiet, white friend. One day I meet him in the middle of Chicago walking, because my school is in town, Chicago. He gave me Franz Fanon, The Wretched of the Earth. I have the book till now. It was gone, lost, gone all over, but it came back to me now. His name is on it. So he gave me that book. First time I didn't know how to read. I don't have no reference to understand what Fanon was talking. My English was bad. I didn't get it until I went to California. But I went to California because in America, in Europe in general too, I think, the theater is where you find white supremacy. For me, unlike Ethiopian students, agriculture, studying agriculture, political side, for me, I am in theater and I'm where it is all about white people. Molière, Shakespeare, you know, Antigone, Euripides, all this Roman, Greek, Spaniard cultural monopoly is in the theater. So I found out myself in the Native America, well, at that time, I think in the UCLA. But here, black Americans, I would line up like we are, if they did Romeo and Juliet, we are the church, the furniture. We sit around like lifeless. I call ourselves like lampposts, okay? And then I start to, they're putting me with these people. I say, I'm not Negro. And the theater also now start to attack my humanity, my father's training of me as a, you know, in theater. I used to do play even when I was a kid in high school. No school I was closed, even in Jimma, without my writing a play. In Addis Ababa, I was awarded scholarship at the Universitas Las University because my play became the best high school play, for example. The tradition I have from my father. Now in the Goodman Newton School of Drama in Chicago, I began to doubt anything I had in the past. So now it's, you enter into a very irresponsible rage, anger, and then reading, I think, Malcolm X, George Jackson, Angela Davis was also coming at UCLA at that time, reading these books, and me questioning and saying, huh, these black people are from Africa, huh? And some look like me. So also, when I see him in the street in Chicago, I used to be confused. She looks like my sister. No, she's Negro. She's not Ethiopian. All the psychological, you know, clashes. So anyway, it's a long way to tell you this. Yeah. But this is the person that went to America. And then the Black American Revolution, the Black Power, Black Panther, even if I outgrow it, this were the very beginning political eruptions that began to shape my search to find my own soul or my own spirit.
And why cinema?
It's accidental. I was actually in the theater department and I was fighting white supremacy. I was doing a black play by Baraka called The Dutchman. It's a very militant play, but it gives you a good opportunity to confront white people. And I won a big prize in Los Angeles as the best actor. But they didn't want to broadcast. The first time, I am good in stopping. They stopped the broadcast of acting students at UCLA being on television. They stopped television because they told me, if you do Baraka, please don't do it. You will have a better opportunity to win. I said, no, I stubborn. It's a long history. I fought back. And then I was the first best actor with this foreigner. American kids were crying all over the place. So I win the best prize. It is all over Los Angeles Times. I did The Dutchman. And so basically, this was the era of Angela Davis also for me, because she was where we used to go for a coffee called Gypsy Wagon, a very well-known place we go. She would be, we'd see her, and she's like a very proud woman. You look at her, and she's amazing. I sat in 2-3 lectures. She's very deep, deep. It's, you have to have a lot of information to understand where she is. But I admired her like hell. And that's it. I mean, in terms of cinema, they were trying, because of this incident, they want to expel me from school. So the committee of white teachers, I didn't know they were trying to expel me. I went to the theater, the auditorium of cinema, and I saw Larry Clark, this tall guy who is a film student, standing by the door. Students making film, and I said, this is power. My goodness, they were like standing after their film. They show their short film, debate goes on. I said, this is powerful. I should try this. I went to this guy. He's a well-known British film teacher. He was the chairman of the department. So I go to him. My name is Noam, as a troubled man. So he says, Haile Gerima, what do you want now? I say, I want to study cinema. I don't want theater no more. He transferred me right there. He liked me a lot. He died just recently in England. He was a film teacher. They used to fly him every weekend to teach film. He was the best film school creator. At UCLA lifted big because of him. So he has no hang up. He says, okay, you want to go film school? Okay. He put me. As I was taking the elevator, a committee of white teachers were going upstairs to expel me to him. And he says, well, your trouble is over. They said, why? Well, Haile is gone. Oh, he's gone. Yeah. Then they found out I'm in the film department. So anyway, basically, because white Americans could not accept Amiri Baraka, who was at that time Leroy Jones, his play is powerful. It's a powerful within the tradition of black American literature, like Sterling Brown. You saw in After Winter, he was his teacher, and that guy, my film on Sterling Brown is not justice. The man, he was a very progressive. He's the first poet who made ordinary black people become personalities in his poetry.
Okay.
Unlike others, he was more obsessed about poor black people, sharecroppers, workers, etc. So that's basically.
Yeah, and then let's speak about Italy. I mean, You have been acclaimed all over the world, and one can say
without
that,
a bank.
No, and one can say that maybe Italy is not by chance one of the places in your work is less known and also less accessible. I know that you now have been for decades struggling both against the denial to access to archives, as well as the trouble in the distribution of your cinema. Could you tell a little bit what are the main moments of this difficult relationship and why you are still so dangerous for Italian?
Well, my father, I'll tell you, my father was telling, you know, he always said to me, the Italians, he said, what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
He said the British, he was the first to receive one of the people received the British and Haile Selassie come through Sudan as the war is ending. So he says, the British, if you start digging from this here with a shovel, if you dig from here, you'll never find their heart, he said. So it all remains in my head about how British are dangerously intriguist than Italians at front, etc.
Okay.
Yeah. But my experience, you know, first is meeting Italians in festivals.
Okay.
This is Harvest has come out, and Bushmama has already finished.
Yeah.
And when I meet them, and I say, oh, Italians, I'd like to meet you because we have common history. And most of the time, especially if they are in a powerful position like Rai or producers, immediately I am Cassandra. I bring bad news. I didn't know that. But later I said, I am bad news for the colonial contradiction. Every time they see me, Haile from Ethiopia, I'm bad news. I remind them everything. I didn't know collectively Italians have another narrative. They have created another narrative that has nothing to do with the history.
Mm-hmm.
Italians completely fabricated, and then they believe the fabricated narrative. So I realized over time they have a narrative. Why? Because every Italian, this is every Italian I'm telling you, it could be a hotel manager, it could be a waiter, it could be in a visit place like a museum, it could be in circumstances of visa, coming to a visa office, Italian, immediately Italian visa is different with me. Other filmmakers I know and me would go, they have a different relationship with the embassy or the visa. I am always, why? Why do you want to go? Who are you, etc. Filmmaker, what do you make film? Oh, yeah. There's film in Ethiopia. And then they would, if they say, you know, anything about our past, they say, you know, Italians were good for Ethiopia. It's the first sentence. They say, And then they say, we build schools, we build churches, we build road, hospital, and you hear this, and you say, First, I'm operating. Italians are going to be my friends, and we're going to do movies together. So, I didn't know this part.
Okay.
especially in Rome, when I first came to do the film in Rome.
And when you first came
in Rome is like I think I could have come to Milano earlier. I don't know, on the African Film Festival. I don't know, but when I wanted to do the film and I was in Rome, it became very. All my crew was surprised because the hotel guy just quickly said, "You're from Ethiopia? Oh, passport. Oh, you know Italians, Ethiopians. We did good." And it goes on. The French are bad. Look what they did to Europe, Africa, the Germans. Italians left the best road. And so you get very tired of it because it's another narrative.
Mm-hmm.
My father's narrative was racism. Italians developed, even when they were doing sexual intercourse with Ethiopian women, they want the Ethiopians to come from the back door, like the U.S. segregation. They began Iran, Italian section, Farange section, meaning Italian section, and Abesha section, Ethiopian mm-hmm. section. In Addis, Desse, Jibma, everywhere. There were bars Ethiopians can go in. Cinema houses they built, nobody Ethiopian can go there. And that's why maybe my grandmother calls it the house of the devil. She would, mm-hmm. she calls it, she, I don't know if she went in or not. But so I'm just saying to you, it's like, it's later on, I woke up and said, huh, I am Cassandra. I am bringing bad news for these people because they are in this, they have agreed to deny.
Mm-hmm.
Without conspiracy, without big conference, without, this has nothing to do with, in fact, the fascists would be, really, yeah. fascist Italians are straight with me. They say, oh, so you're from Ethiopia, I want Mussolini medal. Do you have it in Addis Ababa? Bring me, I'll pay you big, I'll give you what, a poster, photograph. We mark it. And when he tells me about Mussolini, what he did, he tears comes down.
Mm.
I prefer that than liberal Italians who tell me, oh, you know, for example, let me tell you, the best time I said, this is crazy. I went to Luce,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sitting across this man, made an appointment, because Luce first wrote me a letter after Adwa showed in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, I think Silvestri attacked mm-hmm. them or something. They say, we want to work with your second film because the press was saying, look, German television participated. How come Rai? How come Luce? How did not participate? So I get a letter saying, we would like to work on your next film. When I started Adwa, I was trying to do all of it together, including the one now, Black
yeah,
Lions.
Yeah.
But I couldn't because they took the money from a Catholic organization
uh-huh.
and they never gave me the footage they say they will send me. And they lost the document. So after many years of back with many presidents that are come, that go, I have email like to put a book on. So I go to this, I go to Rome and I go to this guy. I think it's in after I shot something, I went there and I said, you know, and he says, you know, Haile, Italy now is a very bad place. It's the fascists are everywhere. Berlusconi, you know. And I said, I came to you. I didn't come to Berlusconi. I came to you. Are you fascist? I said to him, because I said, if you're not fascist, what's the problem? They are fascist, okay. But I want to make a film and you are here. I am asking you to collaborate, to co-produce, produce, or do something that you want to do. He says, but you don't understand Italian politics now is bad. I say, all of it. It's again and again and again because, let me tell you, what I noticed is this bureaucracy, thick, primitive bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
Italians laugh at Africa. I have seen worse here, bureaucracy-wise. Yeah. When an Italian wants to put the spoon back the way she was, that spoon, mm-hmm. you can't move it, you'll be finished. The spoon, no, we call it cozy, baba, finished. So it's dangerous when you see, even now, I don't trust the liberality, the window of liberality. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's unresolved contradiction. Italy has never really faced, like the British, it's not only Italy, like the British never faced a colonial. In fact, they are now the arbitrators of all oppressed people.
Yeah.
The BBC talks about Afghanistan like they were never there. They talk about Iraq like they never created the problem. Yemen. What country do you know where the British were not there?
Yeah.
Now the BBC talks about it like they don't know. They started the Bangladesh problem. They started the Pakistan problem. They started the Indian problem. And so Italy, in its own miniature colonial history, Libya, Ethiopia, Eritrea, you know. And I know, for example, I'm not sure how many Eritreans want to face Italian mm-hmm. colonialism. I even was have these friends. I said, okay, Ethiopia was a bad country to you. Okay, so how about Italy before mm-hmm. Ethiopia? For 90 years, Italy had you. So what's your experience? When do you write a book about Italian colonialism? They could not pass the Ethiopian devil to get to the Italian situation. So what I'm saying is, I think even Libyans, they have internal big problem, and Italy gets released in this new contradiction. Ethiopians are into ethnic feud.
Mm-hmm.
came from Italian map, not Ethiopians themselves. When you see the whole film I'm making, the map that the TPLF brought in Ethiopia in the, when they came to power was the Italian map of mm-hmm. Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nobody connects it. I showed you in the book, they created five regions of based on ethnic, not geographical. Ethiopia had Begamider, Gojam, Wollo, mm-hmm. Harar, Tigray. Italy came and said, here's the ethnic Oromo here, Oromo, Galla. At that time, Galla. Now even the Oromos, when they see my movie, they're going to get mad at me because every Italian footage documents is Galla, 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 Galla. And then they divided the Galla into five because they realized there is no common in these people either. So Meles and his people, so a small percent of Ethiopia, to come to power, had to create the Italian mm-hmm. map. And no Ethiopian connects it. I think my film will be the first to say, you know, this ethnic division started by Italians.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And it was unearthed by them as a mapography of the new political proposal with a left-wing accent. Yeah. And so to me, I just think that, you know, colonialism in Africa, you know, even the when you see, why do refugees come?
Yeah.
When you see refugees, when you see young people, how do they spell Rome? How do they know London? How do they know America? It's the experiential, fundamental experiential, where Europe, when it has our country, wants a one country. Even, for example, you cannot propose Tigray and Eritrea to be one, mm-hmm. and I'll be alive. They will kill you. Both groups will kill you. In Mussolini's time, Tigray and Eritrea was one region because Italy said so, and the people fall in place, except the ones who were fighting guerrilla warfare. And so I just feel that the denial and the fabrication, the contradiction of the fabricated narrative is in the end a disaster. Because to me, I said, whoa, my father, if you read my father's book, the daily account of Ethiopians, Ethiopian monasteries, mm-hmm. and this is before Graziani, the monasteries, they were burning because the monastery was resisting Italian colonialism. They were burning churches and monasteries,
yeah.
Okay? It's not, you know, and then the fact they didn't go to war crime trial mm-hmm. by British support, American support, you know? You can never have Eichmann be the governor of Germany after the war. You can never. Badoglio was Eichmann for Ethiopia. Poison gas is no joke.
Yeah.
You know, Ethiopians is just, it's amazing. They fight and then they win and they go on. They don't have blues. It's amazing how much is forgiven. And then it's not also forgiven. That's what's dangerous. It is inside brewing. Because my father's songs and poetry mm-hmm. reflect the brewing, bleeding experience of Italian colonialism. And so I'll tell you, for me, I hope to contribute mm-hmm. to demystify this Italian collective amnesia and somehow begin to discuss it happened.
Yeah.
You know? So for me, I don't like. I would like to have Italian friends, but I don't want neurotic friends. You know? Yeah, because our friendship, you know, is affected. It's not a true friendship. There's something hidden.
Yes, I would like to ask you a lot of questions, but I know that we have concern of time. So maybe you want to ask some other
about this sentence about the culture and the language. You repeat often teacher. you have never been a teacher.
Me?
You.
No, all my life I was teaching cinema.
Yeah, of course. because yesterday evening you say that the European intellectual European cannot speak about Africa because they have not the language, the correct language.
It's not only the correct language, it's not correct or right language, it's just the subtext. For example, in Amharic, you know, the Wichale Treaty that caused the Adwa War is because of language. The Amharic says this, the Italian says this.
I totally
the
agree.
Lesson begins right there. So because to me, there is when you speak about human beings, they don't come straight to the colonial world. They come with their thinking history. Because when you develop language, it's a thought system. It's a way you the logic of your thought system. You're not just, you know, human beings are not just physical megaphone. You are a human being with context, cultural context, traditional context, folkloric context. So when you speak, there's that melody, there's that syntax, grammar that comes. So for me, there were Europeans. For example, Cherulli is known to have spoken the best Amharic or the best Oromonia, the best, you know, this, that, etc.
Now, even Piero Fran.
Yeah. Oh, this is for example. So they are in language. They really can go in the language and they can learn. I learned English. I'm not good in English. I still think in it Amharic. Even when I went to school, because I was not from English school per se, I have Ethiopian friends who think in English. I don't think in English. I think in Amharic and I answer in English. Yeah. And so to me, Europeans, the other part of it is, I think Europeans can write by saying, I learned this, instead of, this is it. That's the, to me, the supremacist thing is, when you are arrogantly say, this is it, you create a long history of disaster. Because there's no way you can understand all of it. Because, for example, Samanaurk means wax and gold. Mm-hmm. Okay? Certain people talk with wax and gold. They say something, and then you say something. And then it's equal to the translation. Mm. For example, the Italians in the guerrilla warfare, they faced Ethiopia. Not Ethiopians, Ethiopia. Because they were Ethiopian guerrilla fighters were using hunters. Ethiopian hunters. These hunters have a code, telegram. Only the Japanese have something like this, where you send a message, only one line, and it goes to the receiving end, who fabricates the second line and get the message, hidden message, is equal to. Only Japanese have, no other society. When I went to Japan, I tried to study this aspect. Only, it's like poetry, but one liner. She sends it to you and saying, my father is not letting me go out. I'm in prison. She just said it in one sentence. Nobody can decode it until you get it. Mm-hmm. When you get it, you go look at it, one line. You go like that. Huh. So hunters are very, very well versed in this language. So the Ethiopian snipers during the guerrilla warfare come from a certain tradition in my region I'm talking about. So the tradition they come from, the hunter parents, their descendants taught them how to hunt, how to fight, how, you know, to elephant, lions, etc., whatever. And they know also bird language. So a bird could come, if you see my film, you'll see it. It's amazing history. Even Ethiopians don't know it now because it's a losing art. During the war, the one Armenia who fought the Italians says, we also had a bird language nobody knows or it's not written about. He says, the first time I'm going to tell you. And what happened is basically there are different birds. One bird is only to take you to honey, to find honey to eat. Another bird is to tell you a whole army is coming after me. So the Italians didn't have all this. The Ethiopians had disadvantage on them. When they went to guerrilla warfare, Italians were completely out of commission. But who's going to give credence to barefoot Ethiopians, such a sophisticated? Even at Adwa, they said, well, Ethiopians were big in number. The Italians got lost. No, they were not lost. Italians had mapped Ethiopia from the Roman time, so they were not lost. Ethiopians could be lost from Addis Ababa, not Italians. But Ethiopians defeated Italians even at Adwa by psychological warfare. Even in the second one, the war in the warfare, the physical fight is one thing, but there is a psychological warfare. Ethiopians is conducted against the Italian soldiers. There will be a woman who will tell you who spoke Italian. I think she was, when Stracci took Gondar, she was his girlfriend, okay? I think, because she says, Sua Scelenza.
Eccellenza.
Yeah, who was keeping her, like, you know, keep woman. Like GIs in Asmara had women, Eritrean, Ethiopian women. Well, she was a kept woman for this governor, Luce, Stracci, the first one who took over Gondar.
Staracci.
Yeah. So one Italian guy come and found her having something, digging something. My father was one of the people. She had taken from the Italians, speaking Italian. But her father was shot in Adwa. His jaw was broken. He said to her, you're going to fight, you're going to revenge me. And she never got married to revenge for her father, saying they'll come 40 years later, I'm going to fight Italians. So they came to her doorstep. So this Italian comes and says, oh, I want to sleep with you. They were, what are these people? She said, no, they're peasants digging, because in the day they work, at night, I want plants to. She was lying. They were unearthing the gun she buried to take to the guerrilla warfare. So she lied to this Italian, came in, and then she took him in the house. She says, andiamo to the house. She gives him cognac, or she names it Italian drink. She gets him drunk, and then he says, I want to sleep with you. She said, I belong to Sua Scelenza. And then he got scared and ran out, okay? Now, this woman, then after this, went into the forest, because she's uncovered now. So to me, they don't give the credence of this sophisticated barefoot Ethiopians who have a world history. You know, a lot of times people forget. You know, when you look at Homer, you read Homer, there was Athenians in one group about to go to war.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But Zeus has to be there to say, start the war. And they're waiting, facing each other, the two Greeks. And then say, why don't we start? Say, well, Zeus is not in town. Where is he? He went to a wedding invitation in Ethiopia. This is in Homer time. Ethiopia is not a simple thing you come and take. It's even now, the complication for leaders. Ethiopians don't even know now. I think Haile Selassie is maybe the last leader who understood to maneuver this complicated subtext of culture, subtext of just, you know, the eye, the knowledge, the past knowledge, etc. I don't know, many examples I can give you of misunderstanding. So Europeans always misunderstand. For example, one Ethiopian chief, this British guy, I think, stayed at his house. At night, he washed his feet, the guest. And the guy wrote in the book, it doesn't matter, niggers are always niggers, they don't change. He fell on my feet and washed my feet, because even Ethiopians are niggers in the end. They still worship white people. He mistranslated host. Mm-hmm. He was hosting him. The host gets on his knee to wash the guest's feet. The European wrote something else. This is James Bruce. This is Italian ethnography, anthropology. It's full of bullshit that has no consideration to say, maybe I don't know, I should know. There are people like that. I think there are writers who would respect. But the guy, Kapuscinski, he does not. He thinks he comes from Poland. He doesn't speak good English. He doesn't speak Amharic. He writes about the intrigue of the Ethiopian Empire. He doesn't even know about the guy he wrote. I say, this guy, you wrote a whole chapter on this man. You don't remember him? He says, no, I don't know who is he. There's a film that I have not put in here because the British begged me not to put it in the film. So I'm going to release it somewhere because people have to see what happened in Ethiopia with this guy.
I totally agree with you. In your film Adwa, the language is the correct language to tell story of colonialism.
It tries. Yeah. For example, subtitle, I wish I could tell you. There's one writing my father did, Yoroma Govavist Shmaglo Chulu, Yekinyagar Dabo Yalboka Yevalu, Basaif Torado Eritrean Zelalu. Attempt only. Yeah. You can only attempt, okay? It's like saying young young Italians who just ate unbaked bread.
Mm-hmm.
But the word is Yalboka Yevalu means dough. those who were raised by not real bread cooked, but the buho, the dough, when the flour is mixed with water,
okay.
Dough. He says, it means he's saying in his poetry, they came with a stomachache, farting, is what he's saying. But you can't find the words there to say this is what he's saying.
Okay.
So what we do in subtitle is attempt to give you guide. Mm. But the poetry could never be tried. I'm sorry.
Sure.
No linguist, for example, Harvest, the British are to Bologna and me. The fight is because of that. The British wanted, the British translated right. No, I said no. Ethiopian professors tried. It's only imperfect. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is, I think where I need support from you guys is, Luce is my biggest problem. That thing you talked about, for me in the end, is the monopoly of archive. The monopoly of the archive. Okay? For me,
but also of production.
Yeah, but the production, I'm not going to beg Italians to join me. I will offer what we can co-produce. I did my best. I went to Rai many times. I was embarrassed as a human being. The treatment I got from, I'll never forget the rudeness of this woman and this man in Rai.
Mm-hmm.
Rai was like very racist people. Like, who are you? Kind of, you have to go to explain who you are and things like that. They showed your film, but they don't know you. This is the kind you find. And so for me, co-production is hopeless with Italy for me. But I think in terms of the monopoly of my, my right to access ethnographic or newsreel footage shot bombing us.
Yes,
is a serious issue.
Outrage.
Yeah, it's outrageous, but it's a serious issue for people to understand.
Yeah,
Italians, you have Somali, Eritrea, everybody. We there are people, my people who fought for Italy. There are people who fought against Italy. There are people who fought with the British. All this image of Africans is bought and sold without any. It's a very surreal.
But you said that with or without the rights from Archivio Luce, you will finish this film this year.
Oh yeah, this year is out. This year is the end. Up to now, I'm like, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe next year, maybe next year. Also, Luce's people always go, disappear. I write, are you there? Please respond to me. You got my email or not? Please, no, please. No, no answer, no answer, no answer. Then 1 year later, be patient. My wife is mad because I'm walking up and down one day, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm walking up and down. And she said, what are you doing? Go to bed. I said, Luce sends me, a young guy sends me, be patient. It's not the first time.
But be patient for what?
Meaning like, you're not the only person who needs footage. No. And then finally he came out.
But now for decades.
Yeah, but then again he came out and says, you know, there are people lined up priority-wise. Yours is, you know, not yet ready, etc. And then suddenly he sent me footages when the people from here make noise.
Yeah.
I get some, and then it stops. And then if I say, are there coming some more? It says, be patient.
So we will try to
He likes
more
the word
noise.
Be patient, by the way. He says, be patient. I said to him, how long was one to be patient? And he's a kid. Can you imagine? You know, at my age now, this kid is saying to me, Haile Gerima, be patient. Marco Mueller wrote him a letter. What is wrong with you people? He needs to finish his film. Chakuti, the Venice guy, when he was a president, Marco started. Then said, oh, no problem, we'll give him. I don't get it. Mm. And then all the time, Chakuti, how you say his name? The Venice guy.
Si, poi mi viene.
Yeah, he left Venice. He became Luce, and then he went back to Venice, or his name and like.
I have an answer about your relationship with music. In your films, are the musician Zach Alemayo Estate and Muta Baru. What's your relationship with music? In your film, is very important music.
Yeah, but I've never been lucky to do what I want. What you see is compromise. Because, you know, I, for example, Adwa. I went a year before Mulato Astatke. I said, I was a student when he came back from America as a musician. Mulato, Gashe, respectfully, I want you to do the music, but I want composition.
Mm.
He said, I'll do it and I will pay you. We agreed on the amount, etc. No music, no music, no music, no music. I go to Ethiopia. He says, don't worry, I'll put it in your pocket before you hit the airplane. No music. So finally, he bring all these individual people, great people, only as a musician, like the saxophone player, the well-known guy, saxophone, Fukara, Masinko. He brings me individual music. He records it and gives me that. I could do it myself. I want an Ethiopian film composer in music.
With a rhythm.
Yeah, I couldn't. So I take it, then I crash it like Harvest. Harvest is all from European CD record. I take the music, the individual music, then I crash it in the soundtrack building myself, destroying maybe the initial idea of the music, but bringing it to work for me. That's how Adwa is done, although Mulato Astatke is a composer. Then Sankofa. Sankofa is not, it's a young guy who finally did it. The first person I want to do Sankofa, the time I'm ready to do the film, is Don Cherry. Don Cherry was the one I want to compose. Okay, Don Cherry says to me, when I come back from Europe, I have engagement, I will pass through Washington and do the music. He comes to New York, calls me. He says, I only have one day, I'll come, I'll do the music and go. I say, no, you can't come one day. I made this film 20 years now. You have to stay 1 month to do my music. He says, no, I can't. I'm a musician, I'm engaged. I said, I don't need your music. Wynton Marsalis, the same thing. Oh, no problem, brother. We're going to get down and send you. You're going to have it. I was introduced by a well-known music critic called Wynton. He says, Haile, this film is important. You need to do the music. I send him a tape, and the same thing. He didn't come through, etc., etc. So I'm saying to you, the music in my film, including Teza, is imperfect, not the music I wanted. At least Teza is better. Eza, I would say, not Alemayo Shetty, no, that's my child. When I was youngsters, when I went to America, Alemayo Shetty is what I hear and cry about my mother and my grandmother. No, the real giant of that music is an Ethiopian saxophone player called Jorga. He's the best instrumentalist in Ethiopia. No discipline, but Teza is the closest that I have a music. Okay, it is. Okay, there was budget, there were people. And I had to fire the Ethiopian guy who, you know, first I have music I recorded all over Ethiopia. I bring that. Then I have musicians. Okay, and then when the discipline problem came, I bring an Indian jazz, America, but Indian heritage from to come in. He's like Duke Ellington in piano. I bring him to shape the Ethiopian guy's not coming through at the end. But still, the Ethiopian guy is the reason why Teza has music. The other guy just gave attention around the music. But the Ethiopian guy is giant in music for me. Even now, I don't learn my lesson. I sent him my father's songs. I say, would you compose this? He sends me like Teza. I said, I can play Teza. I have the music right. It's mine. So I can play Teza in my film. But I want you to compose based on this guerrilla warfare song that little girls sing. I want you to orchestrate this Ethiopian girls, about 100 Ethiopian girls singing this. It will be an amazing sound orchestration. Hopefully I will do it, but that's where I have to go myself, not really. Because when musicians are also daily fighting to live here, to play there, I'm not a priority. Also, my vision, I'm not a musician, but I know what I want. I know what I want. For Sankofa, for example, you know, Muta is not in the music. There's not. Okay. No, he's not. The music is done by a young Howard University jazz graduate, David White. But I needed a little bit age. He was too young for that. Okay. Still, for example, the end part that you see, the way the credits all go, I brought a whole chorus singers. I brought stone, like in Ethiopia, and the stone I put in that music, people don't know, that's Ethiopian stuff. I brought into this spiritual singers when they were singing. I made them hit stones. I went to the river, brought at least many stones, so everybody was clapping with a stone, which is a different. So in Ethiopia, Ethiopian musicians can score music if they can. We can discuss what I want, because I come. My father is a musician. I know what I want. You bring your talent, your skill. We put together. Hear me out. I have the feelings, but not the skill. In fact, I'll tell you, I'm always jealous about musicians who make instrument talk. I'm not jealous about nobody, nothing else in the world. But when a musician plays, so I said, damn, I wish. So even one time, while I was at film school, I bought a trumpet to really go into music. Then I said, what's my priority? Music, trumpet, or film? Because it's taking as much away from cinema. Otherwise, I have a feeling, but I don't have the talent of making instrument talk, whether it's the piano or the, you know, whatever, the bagana in Ethiopia. I'm bad. I don't even drum right, but I know what I want. So you need to be believed by a musician. Say, believe me, I know what I want. Try this to give me. Okay, I could do that in the editing. I'm editing myself. Even now in Adwa, it's crashing. Music from here, music from here, creating this vortex that I get what I want. And I like my sound to be a battleground. I don't want passive sound. I want dynamic sound. And sometimes people smooth. Even now, Black Lions, the guy who mixed that, fucked up. I was telling her, I'm stopping to work with him because it's the first time I see it in Italy. And he took all the vortex out and put smooth white American sensibility. When I finished Bush Mama, the mixer, a white guy, he says, Haile, you horrify me how you use sound. I said, fantastic. I said, fantastic, because it's imperfect, but I'm going the right direction. If it is If it is fighting the European idea of the music it wants to receive, but, you know, like Latin American sound is something I identify with.
Can I still ask you a question?
You or her? Who's the boss?
No, to you. I don't know your
I'm kidding.
See, you know, the
I'm
people
kidding.
Are waiting for you there. But
I'm kidding. No, no, I'm glad I stay here and go to bed.
No, if you would tell us something. I know that you, Shkiana, built up a dependent camp, or also Sankofa, all the network. Could you tell us something in order to give an idea that the fact you're in filmmaking is not just about camp, but also mode of production of cinema?
Well, good. I mean, distribution, production, but also, I'll tell you, a lot of times people forget. To me, even let me speak about your Italian here, you know, guy. The one, this white American guy imitates, Tarantino imitates the guy, Italian guy. What's his name? The Good, the Ugly, and the, he made the film The Good, the Ugly. No. Yeah, the filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Leone.
Very good. For example, that man is a Marxist. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tarantino is a monkey imitating the Marxist. And the problem with the Italian filmmaker, the problem for me is with a lot of Marxist and left wing, they do not understand that it doesn't matter the class struggle so long as the form is oppressive and imperialist.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy of that filmmaker for me, I could be wrong. For me, the tragedy of that filmmaker who ideologically I like, the form is very bombastically Hollywoodian.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea of Italians and French thinking maybe if we make it like if we Hollywoodize it, maybe the audience, the idea of reformatting the form. For me, the Latin American cinema, briefly in Cinema Nova, the Cuban, the Miguel Litin, San Ynez, Bolivia, what's very important about those films is the form. Imperfect, but the form, to me, the form, if it is the same form, like even now black filmmakers in Hollywood make movies, but the form is toothless. It makes you passive. It, you know, to me, a cinema should activate your participation towards an action. And the poetry thing I was telling you, that's only Japan and Ethiopia, it's a line of poem. You match the line to physically act. In fact, the classic case was the mother was stranded at the church, a Sunday morning church. Elephant with big horn ear prevented her from going home. She sent one liner.
Uh-huh.
He gets it. He said, "Huh, my mother is in trouble. An elephant. Ah." He then matches the answer. One line, two line is equal. He mounts his horse and goes to the church, kill the elephant and frees his mother. Which means this for me is saying art can materialize physical manifestation from, like, instead of passive active audience relationship, active relationship with the spectator, where you make at the end physical stand, physical revolution. Not because I have always hated European cinema that made me cry, like The Bicycle Thief.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me cry because it keeps me passive. And I said to myself, all this opera about the people working in the coal mine, suffering, and the bourgeoisie watching it in opera, and then go to drink wine, is to me the end of art. But if art can go to your home and make you choke over the wine, even if you try to drink, I always tell my friends, the LA Rebellion, you were talking, I didn't want to deal with it, but I'll tell you why later. But, you know, I will tell my friends, for me, I want my film to follow them in their bedroom.
Mm.
I don't want them to have business as usual after my film. Otherwise, I exploit my... If they go disturbed for a few days, I like that. I prefer that. So to me, cinema, the whole thing is, there's nothing new cinema we're going to do that Hollywood did not. It's a theme. They've always made everything. Any Arab stories in Hollywood, any African story in Hollywood, what white principality, white supremacy. But the form is the problem. It pacifies the audience. to activate the audience, you have to create an active relationship by respecting the people who want to see your movie. Hollywood says, dumb it, dumb the movie more.
Yeah.
Meaning, oh, they're dumb, so they like dumb movie. Dumb it. It's a language, franca, lingua franca in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Dumb it. No, more dumb it, they would say. Because it was a business people determining the cultural diet of a people. And this is where America has failed. So to me, Italian cinema, to begin to take Hollywood, okay, first Hollywood tries to imitate neorealism, okay, and then and then Italians now are born to imitate the imitator? That's a tragedy. The Spanish call it El Tragedia. So to me, that's serious. And I'm glad you brought it, because to me, I think when you make a film, also my wife and me, we said, well, let's also do distribution, have an audience relationship we built. By the time we hit Sankofa, we have, the audience grew with us. The small audience became so big, they put us on the world map. Otherwise, Hollywood at Berlin, all U.S. newspaper rejected us. Even those who send us congratulations, your film is selected, they didn't see our film. We made it in a basement. The film comes out, they stop talking to us. The press in Berlin, only for Italian and French and European press came. In the press, no American press came, including Independent magazine, did not show up. In Montreal, the same thing. In Toronto, the same thing. They ignored us like we did not exist. So black people took the movie, put it in the theater, renting the theater, okay? And my wife played a role in creating this thing we call the Sankofa family.
Yeah.
And every, at least 35 states, we have what we call our landing community. Mm-hmm. We land, that community distributes our film. We just appear there. I left teaching for 2-3 years to discuss with the audience about the, you know, our film and the you know, the role of white supremacy cinema. And so to me, I you know, the whole thing is, I think this is where, in my view, European cinemas contributed to its own destruction because it missed the point of form. And I remember in Cuba, the argument came, and I don't know, there was an Italian critic there, and we had, me and the person had, and I was saying, you know, he was saying, and he was saying something. I said, listen, Hollywood is a conglomeration of European mindset. The brilliant of Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Italy, all those people who made Covadas in Italy were in Hollywood. The genius of Europe, Germans, were in Hollywood. So you are Hollywood. Hollywood is Europe. The problem now is it's killing you like us. It's coming back to kill your culture. It is happening. And it's returned to kill European culture. And also to me, I mean, I wish you could. There's a book called The House of Nets at ETS. It shows you in that book how many brilliant Europeans came to die in Hollywood, except Brecht, who escaped quickly.
Just in time.
Yeah. But most, the brilliant, the best of Europe, best in music, best in montage, in cinema, they're all just eaten by this industry.
Yeah.
And I call it garbage disposal. It ate them like this.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Hyland.
Thank you.
I mean,
I hope you could make some sense out of all this.
Sure.